Central Jersey 1450 WCTC News. Central Jersey Talk Radio 1450 WCTC.
You're back with the restaurant guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, where we serve Long Meadow Ranch Pratolungo olive oil, and we're here talking with Ted Hall, who owns Long Meadow Ranch out in California. Hi there, Ted.
Good morning.
So you were talking before we took a little break about your olive oil, which, by the way, just as a frame of reference, the Napa Valley Select is pretty reasonable, and the Pratolungo is about $50 a bottle,
yeah, $45,
something like that, retail. So this is stuff you use very sparingly, and you really treasure it. Now, it comes from a different type of olive we talked about, and it comes from, these are the oldest olive groves in California, is that correct?
Well, they're the oldest commercial olive orchard in Napa County.
Okay.
And there are olive trees that are earlier that date from the formation of the missions, which would have been in the early 1800s, 1835 kind of time period. Our olives were planted in the 1870s. But were the first commercial orchards planted in Napa County.
Why don't you tell us how you found them?
Well, they were, very interestingly, what we now understand is that the olives came around the horn as cuttings and were planted by a guy named E.J. Church, who acquired this property from the U.S. government in a process kind of like homesteading. It's called a patent grant. And interestingly, this property I actually have the original deed, and it's signed Ulysses S. Grant, President of the United States.
Wow.
It's absolutely astonishing.
That's
so
phenomenal.
Church and his family planted grapes and olives and farmed here until the unfortunate period of Prohibition, where much of the agriculture, especially in the hillsides of the Napa Valley, was very stressed because of people not any longer having a market, a legal market anyway, for their wine. So the property is pretty much abandoned for agriculture, and the forests basically grew back up over these sites. So by the time that we arrived here in the late 1980s, we were primarily looking at the ranch initially as a place to resume grape production, and we'd been here actually for almost a year before I started to recognize in the forest a pattern of certain trees, and the closer we looked, the more we realized that these were olives. And the olives actually were hidden in second growth forests that in some places the new growth had grown up 75 feet and higher above the olives, and they were completely lost.
So these olive trees stayed alive and survived in the under part of the forest. That's pretty amazing.
Well, the olives are extraordinarily hardy. They're commercially viable olive orchards.
Actually, Ted, we're going to have to...
Turkey and Greece that are 500 years old.
Ted, we're going to have to take a break for the news. We'll come back in a moment and talk with Ted Hall of Long Meadow Ranch. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 1130.
This is your place for Central Jersey news, traffic and weather, and interesting two-way talk. This is Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, New Brunswick, a greater media station. Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Today we're talking to Ted Hall from Long Meadow Ranch, and you can reach him at longmeadowranch.com. Ted, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
So we spent the first half of the show, Ted, talking about olive oil, which is pretty darn special stuff. And if you're out there in the land thinking, $50 for a bottle of olive oil, I have two things to say to you. One, it's only a 500 milliliter bottle of olive oil. And secondly, it's really amazing.
It's very special.
And I tell you what, if anybody wants to try it, stop by Stage Left Restaurant tonight.
Tonight you can try it.
Just try it for
free.
Sit at the bar, we'll bring you some
bread
and olive oil.
You can taste the olive oil.
So there's a little plug.
A lot of people taste olive oil by sipping it, like you would sip a wine.
Yeah. They have bad complexions. I don't know. Anyway, so but let's talk about your wine, Ted.
Sure.
You make one red wine, a very highly regarded red wine, and a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc.
That's correct. Now, it's primarily Cabernet.
And this was your primary goal when you and your family moved your family to Long Meadow Ranch?
It was. I had the good fortune of starting to make wine as an amateur when I was a graduate student in the early 70s, and I was fortunate enough to be taken under the wing by one of the founding families at Ridge Vineyards, which is a renowned California vineyard, specializing especially in mountain fruit from the Santa Cruz Mountains, which is south of San Francisco, and another winery, David Bruce Winery.
Oh, yeah.
I had the
also
good
Santa
fortune
Cruz,
of making wine for 17 years as a kind of a large-scale amateur.
And
along the way, I made some really great wines, and I made some very terrible wines.
Right.
And it's from that lesson, though, what we really learned is that you could take mountain fruit and do some very interesting things with it, which was to get it wonderfully ripe, but to do it in a way that was balanced and without high levels of alcohol. So I came to this this proposition with the idea that I could do something very different. In the 70s and 80s, people had focused on so-called monster wines, big, heavily extracted, lots of wood, very high alcohol, and you know they never aged into anything that was very interesting. I had seen people chase these kinds of fads, and I began to be concerned that we saw a little bit of this, at least in the high end of the wine world, over the last 10 or 15 years. And we really represent a very different point of view. We're trying to make a wine that is better in the second half of the bottle, that a chef is really proud to pair with his food.
Now, I understand that you have Kathy Corison as your winemaker?
Kathy Corison remains our consulting winemaker. Kathy was our winemaker from inception in 1994 through our 2003 vintage, and we now have a very talented principal winemaker, Ashley Heisey, also working with Kathy.
You know, it's interesting when we read that we were unaware after we contacted you and asked you to come on the show that Kathy was your winemaker, but it makes a lot of sense to Mark and I. We have a vertical selection of Kathy's wine on our, what that means for everybody in the listeners. We have a selection of Kathy Corison and Cabernets for many vintages. And Ted, just as you were saying, we found at Stage Left, where we manage a wine list of about 900, 1,000 labels, that many of the California wines, some of the very expensive high-end California wines, they either fall apart as they age, or like you said, they don't turn into anything worthwhile.
They can be top-heavy.
Our basic point of view is that wine is food, and when evaluating it, you should think about it that way. So we're not making wine to win sniff spit contests.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the world has gone to an evaluation method where it's sniff spit 95.
Right. Right.
What does that have to do with a great meal at your restaurant?
You know, it's true. We say all the time that a lot of these big wines, and one of the reasons that we have your wine on our list as well, but we have Kathy's wines. They age well because they're not made to be these sniff spit winners, and they also go really well with food. We have many expensive wines that we wind up. You'd be surprised how many $250, $300 bottles of wine we clear a half a bottle away. People get up and leave, and there's like a quarter of a bottle left because they're just, when they're so big like that, they're hard to finish with your dinner.
You guys are natural customers of ours. I mean, you clearly are serving your clientele in a way that we're fundamentally aligned. We find that chefs will select our wine for featured dinners completely unsolicited by us. And when I get a chance to ask them why they do that, they say, you know, Ted, what you're creating is wine that really is part of the food. You know, there's so many of these wines which are basically a bottle of some guy's ego.
Yeah.
And, you know, why do I want this other guy's bottled ego on the table competing with my
ego? Generally, I don't.
Usually I'm sitting across from Mark, who's got his own ego sitting in the chair across from me. Why would I need a bottle
of wine? It's not a bottle. It's out there.
Yeah, so what we say, and you've already alluded to it about the bottle coming off the table, it's really important to us that people perceive the second half of our bottle to be better than the first.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ted. Kathy does a wine dinner with us every couple of years. I'll make sure we pour the Long Meadow Ranch at the next.
That'll be fun. We were talking about your philosophy for Long Meadow Ranch. While you don't market it as an organic wine, did you plant the vineyards and do you practice agriculture in such a way to make the wine that is sort of sustainable? Is that one of your goals?
Oh, absolutely. And we're actually certified organic, which is very unusual. And in that we're certified by the California Certified Organic Farmers. So we really do walk the talk.
Mm-hmm.
And the net result, you know, our wines have a clarity, a purity that is most easily grasped by people by the very, very, very long finish. And that's a result of the fact that we have nothing interfering with the natural grape growing process. So there's no pesticide, there's no herbicide. But even at the other extreme, we don't use chemical disinfectants in our winery.
Mm-hmm.
So we rely on a very basic process of soda ash, which is alkaline, and citric acid, which is natural product of citrus fruit. So we wash, we make an alkaline solution, we then neutralize it with the citric acid and then wash with clean water. So that, and we rely, basically on wild yeast fermentation. So the expression of terroir, the unique character of this location in the Western Hills above the Napa Valley is very present. And I guarantee you, I mean, laypersons to, you know, the most sophisticated master of the wine all spontaneously comment about the fact that after they've had a taste of the wine, it lingers and lingers and lingers in this kind of very clear, unobstructed communication of the flavor that was created in the vineyard.
One of the things that Ted just mentioned was terroir, and just to for our listeners, the terroir is a word that... sort of the reason you use the French word and don't translate it into earth, which is the most literal translation, is it really a word used to describe wines that express a sense of place. And the idea is that if you grow wines in sort of a factory farm way, which is to basically kill everything in the soil and sterilize everything and to make sure that nothing bad gets to your plant, and sadly nothing good gets to your plant or nothing interesting gets to your plant, and all that gets there are the chemical fertilizers that you buy from the company, and you grow a powerful wine that doesn't have any specificity to it. But if you grow, as Ted has talked about growing, the wine that comes from certain pieces of land tastes very specific and unlike any other piece of land because of all the, you know, the little things in the soil that you don't kill, the beneficial things that would get killed by pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called a sense of terroir. And that's probably the most important thing that Mark and I look for in any wines. And that's what Ted, you know, is spending a lot of time and effort to get in his wine. And it's also right for the planet
to make
the same
them
time.
Taste like they come from Mayacamas Mountains.
And so that's when people say terroir, don't be afraid of that word. That's exactly what people are talking about. Did I do a good job with that, Ted?
Oh, it's great. I agree with everything you said.
And when we come back, we're going to have to take a short break. But when we come back, you also raise grass-fed beef on Long Meadow Ranch.
We do.
Excellent. Well, when we come back from the great break, we're going to talk a little more about that. But you also, with the grass-fed beef, you avoid hormones and antibiotics that aren't necessary and things like that as well?
Yes, it's basically the same principle we use as you were just discussing.
You sound like
production of wine.
You sound like a very, very busy man, Ted.
I want to talk about the
you
solar...
remember the Ed Sullivan Show and the guy that spun the plates?
Exactly.
I definitely want to talk about the solar panels at your place, too, after we come back.
High tech. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal here talking with Ted Hall, owner of Long Meadow Ranch, and I guess food renaissance man. Hi, Ted.
Hello.
We talked, I just want to touch briefly on this, on the grass-fed beef that you raise, organic grass-fed beef that you raise.
Well, we use a heritage breed called the Highland, which is one of the very first domesticated cattle breeds that comes from the northern part of the British Isles. Interestingly, it's been in the United States since the 1850s, where a portion of its bloodline actually found its way into the Texas Longhorn. But the reason we do that is these cattle have not been bred for the industrialized commercial cattle production system that has come to dominate the United States, where we basically take cattle and move them into a feedlot and stuff them filled with corn and then grade the beef with higher and higher levels of fat and somehow come to believe that the highest level of fat is the highest quality beef. These animals are wonderfully effective at converting forage, green grass, into healthy beef. And our beef is naturally tender. It's a byproduct of the genetics of this Highland breed and is extraordinarily healthy. We have fat in a steak of our grass-fed beef that's equivalent to that of chicken breast, which is about 6 grams of fat per ounce.
You know, people don't realize that grass-fed beef can be a lot healthier.
You can actually order some of this right from the website, longmeadowranch.com, and you can get it shipped to you frozen. But I have an interesting thing. You said that the animal efficiently converts the grass. I was thinking conventionally converts the grass into meat, and I'm responded of my favorite bumper sticker I've ever seen, which was, if God wanted us to be vegetarian, he wouldn't have made animals out of meat.
Well, you know, the other thing that you get from a grass-fed animal is these animals, our beef product, are very, very high in omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
Portion of our beef has omega-3 equivalent to the level of wild salmon. It's very, very high in beta-carotene. So if you look at a grass-fed steak, the New York steak, where there's a strip of fat on the outside, a grain-fed animal will be kind of pure white. A grass-fed steak will be slightly orange or maybe slightly yellow. The USDA in the old days would tell you that was a flaw because
mm-hmm.
it didn't get enough corn.
Right.
What that orange is beta-carotene, which is enormously
important and good for you.
Important and good for you. And it's all really, really simple. It's sort of the theme through all of this. If you want to be healthy and have healthy food, consume a healthy plant or consume a healthy animal. So it's all about creating an environment where plants and animals live in the healthiest possible way.
So Ted, we're running out of time here, but you got to talk to me about solar panels. You invest almost $800,000 in solar panels for your property. How are you ever going to recoup that?
Well, we walk the talk. Believe it or not, we can supply all of our power from the solar panel. It's
for the whole
grid
place.
Tied. This is a simple little concept. But power, at least in California, has time of use.
Mm-hmm.
So in the afternoons, in the summertime, when everybody's got their air conditioner on, the price of power is pretty high. It's like 35 cents a kilowatt. And at night, it's 6 cents. And so what we do is produce power very efficiently in the afternoon in this bright, wonderful sunshine. We sell it back to the power company at 35 cents. We help them solve their peak load so they don't have to use oil-fired generators and so on. And when we need power when the sun goes down, we're buying it back from the power company at 6 cents. So we make this huge spread. And in addition, we're actually at this point generating more power than we use. So
spectacular.
Looked over 20 years, we'll make it all back. And
we've
done something for our planet and ourselves.
Just
sure
so
will.
The listeners understand how it works, is if you install in certain states, if you install solar electrical generating capacity, what happens is basically you supply your own needs, and if you make excess power, if you make more power than you need at any given time, basically, you sell it back to the power company. Your electric meter runs backwards. And what Ted is talking about is not only is it running backwards, when it's most sunny is when they most need the power, it's running backwards at a faster rate, and then he's buying back the power at night. And so by thinking about it, you know, Ted is not only, again, helping the planet and doing what's best for the planet, but he's also, you know, doing well for himself.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about this one is that we're actually providing power at the time when everybody needs it the most.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a particular rifle shot at the problem. And our calculations are that we save about 70 tons of carbon that otherwise would have gone into the atmosphere to produce power.
Well, Ted, it's clear to us that you're obviously more than just a farmer. You're also a pretty substantial businessman at the same time. Now, you had a pretty important position with Mondavi over the last year, didn't you?
Well, I did. I served as chairman of the board of the Robert Mondavi Corporation from early 2004 through the year. But I have had some business experience. But I think the reason that I was asked to take on that assignment is that I had real credibility with everybody in this important production process from the vineyard all the way up, because I have not only some business experience but also a real hands-on understanding of the substance of it. So it helps if somebody's trying to tell you something that isn't quite straight, and you really know, it keeps everybody in line.
Well, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys on Central Jersey 1450. I'm Francis Schott. I'm here with my partner, Mark Pascal, and we're talking with Ted Hall from Longmeadow Ranch, and we've been talking about olive oil production, production of grass-fed beef, wines, and you also have organic vegetables out there that don't make it to the East Coast, I assume.
No, we don't. But they make it to some of the greatest restaurants here in the Napa Valley. We have the wonderful good fortune of many, many people coming to visit over the course of the year, and we have nationwide reach, I like to think, of our organic vegetables by virtue of these fabulous restaurants who are our customers.
Well, Ted, we want to thank you for taking time out of your busy
schedule. Thanks so much for being here, Ted.
Thank you very much.
You were a great guest.
And that was Ted Hall from Longmeadow Ranch. You can find out more about Ted Hall and all of his great products at longmeadowranch.com. Or you can check later on today at restaurantguysradio.com.
And we'll be back in just a minute. We're going to talk a little bit more about where to find some other great olive oils and how you can get them onto your shelf at home.
And we're also going to find out about the Longmeadow Ranch CD, which is available. So don't go away. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal from Stage Left Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. We are here every day from 11 to 12 on our fabulous radio show called The Restaurant Guys. But we were talking with Ted Hall of Longmeadow Ranch, very serious guy, does a lot of stuff in a big ranch out in California, all sustainably, makes some high-end olive oil, some high-end wines, but he does have a sense of humor. I got to tell you, I was on the website, and there is a Longmeadow Ranch CD that you can buy.
Is it hip-hop?
No,
sound like the hip-hop kind of guy.
It's called The Songs of Longmeadow Ranch. You ready? Bonanza, Gunsmoke, The Magnificent Seven, The Rifleman, How the West Was Won.
Seven, that was a song.
And my favorite is Rawhide. I love it. Speaking of Rawhide, you can also, in addition to being able to buy a cow, you can't buy the cow online. I live in a third-floor walk-up. How would I get them up there? But you can buy...
Cows can go upstairs, you know.
Three floors in Jersey City?
Probably not.
Then what do I do when I get them in my apartment?
You probably can't make the turn.
Right, exactly. So you can also buy a cowhide there. So if you want a cowhide to throw in your living room floor, $500, a variety of colors. Or you can buy, for your college dorm, an actual Highland steer skull with horns, $140.
Hey, listen. Full product utility. I like it. Use everything on the animal, like the Indians.
If any fraternity guys are listening, you should spring for the skull and put it up in the frat house. It'll look great, and you'll do your part for sustainable agriculture.
But seriously, we were talking a little bit about olive oils, and the Prato Longo is a spectacular olive oil, but there are some other great ones coming from California. And you know, in Italy, it's kind of every winery has an olive oil, but that's not so much the case, or certainly in southern Italy. That's not so much the case in California, but there are a couple of wineries that put out some very good olive oils. There's B.R. Cohn has an olive oil, Silverado has one, Araujo makes one, Joseph Phelps, even Jordan makes an olive oil. But they're so few and far between, but the California olive oil is really taken a real jump in the last 15 or 20 years, the quality level. There's a place you can get a lot of these from the California Olive Oil Council, or www.cooc.com.
And please remember that olive oil is like a magic ingredient. It has the great olive oils really do have flavor. They may even burn the back of your throat a little bit, but you use them not to cook with, but to finish with. Cooking olive oil is cheaper. But when you use olive oils to finish with, it's like salt. It's not just the olive oil itself. The olive oil activates all these other flavors, which is why so many dishes. Try this at home with a good olive oil, not the Colavita that you cook in. I mean, it's okay. But with a really good olive oil, buy a small bottle.
Really can make flavors jump out at you.
Put a little splash on your dish, whether it's fish or whatever it is that's savory. Come by Stage Left tonight, and we can try the very expensive Prato Longo for free. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 12 noon.